We're taking up some laws that pertain to Purim. One of the obligations is to have a seudah, a festive Purim meal, to celebrate the day. There is, however, a strange requirement pertaining to the seudah, one which is, at least on the surface, completely out of character with Judaism as we know it. That is to say that there is a requirement, the way it's stated, as that a person is supposed to drink, to imbibe wine, until he does not know the difference between cursed is Haman and blessed is Mordechai. That's very strange, I suppose, for two reasons. One, all the commentaries point out that in general, drunkenness is something which is not only not promoted, but it's considered to be an evil phenomenon, with good reason. Because when a person is drunk, essentially he's negating his rational faculty. And all the natural inhibitions that would keep a person's emotions in check, a person's base emotions, a person's instincts in check, are removed. And that's a state that, by and large, the Torah frowns upon. Let me explain, however. We have to try and be as accurate as we can. In and of itself, if a person, for whatever reason, is feeling upset or depressed, and or just, let's say, it's a holiday, it's a Yom Tov, and the person is drinking wine. If the person were to drink an amount that would cause that person to be tipsy, or let us say even drunk, in and of itself, that would not constitute a sin. It's not a sin to imbibe alcoholic beverages, according to Judaism. That is, even though, as I just mentioned, that when a person is in a state of drunkenness, that type of a state is something which Judaism would frown upon, because a person is supposed to be in a state where, first of all, their instincts are under control, and secondly, where the mind is capable of functioning rationally, the rational faculty, which is the most significant element in the human being. It's supposed to be in a state where it can be functioning properly and a person can think clearly. Still in all, that doesn't constitute a halachic violation. There's no halacha that a person cannot put themselves in that state. When we speak about the defect and the evil of living that kind of life, a drunken kind of a lifestyle, we're talking about that, a drunken kind of a lifestyle. Or it could become a problem. Obviously, if a person is an alcoholic on a steady basis, that's a serious problem, because it's going to lead to the destruction of their life. First of all, the mere fact that a person is drunk is taking a risk, because, as I said, the natural inhibiting forces of one's conscience are going to be removed, therefore putting yourself in a situation where you're prone to do the wrong thing or to sin. It's no accident that people that want to engage in hedonistic activities, or you go to these nightclubs and other places of that type, and it's always going to be accompanied by either drugs or alcohol. And there's a reason, because when people want to indulge certain emotions, they want to escape from the inhibiting forces of guilt. Now, all that is true, and one should avoid those types of situations. But that is not to say that if a person happens to be very depressed about something, or is very, very disturbed about something, and they just need an escape from reality, and therefore they have a few drinks or a few beers and it makes them feel better, that's okay. There's nothing wrong with that. I'm assuming, of course, the person in that state did not commit any sins. That's a totally different issue. You have to be rational. You have to be intelligent about understanding things of this type. We don't have a emotional abhorrence, a taboo type of a thing about alcohol, as other religions may have. In fact, there is a situation where it is a mitzvah to provide a person with alcoholic beverage. Not to mention, of course, that many of the mitzvos are accompanied by alcoholic beverages, making kiddush over wine, on Yayin, and that's drinking an alcoholic beverage, not to mention the four cups of wine that we recite at the Seder. And let's face it, that's if you're not doing grape juice. But according to some, it's preferable to use wine rather than grape juice. According to others, it doesn't make any difference. But clearly, the use of wine is a mitzvah. You drink four cups of wine, I would imagine it's going to have an effect upon you. And to the contrary, in that situation, it's a mitzvah. It does mention also when they were bringing out a criminal who was going to be executed, that they would prepare a certain type of a drink for him, which contained alcohol in it to calm down his nerves. And the pasuk that they quote is a pasuk from Mishlei: "Tenu yayin l'marei nefesh," give wine to embittered souls. Now, that pasuk itself is not talking about a convicted criminal. It's just cited as a source because, in this context, it would be a fulfillment of that idea. That is to say, give wine. This person is an embittered soul. This person, even though he's committed a crime and is subject even to execution, still has to be treated with compassion. And we're not permitted to inflict upon this person any pain, any suffering that would be in addition to that which he has. The fact that he's dying, that's something that we can't help. Even though the system is constructed, as I mentioned many times, in such a way that it's very rare that they ever have to execute someone. But in the manner of doing it and carrying it out, we have to see to eliminate any extraneous source of pain. And therefore, it's a mitzvah to give him wine, to give him a drink, to calm him down. But the pasuk that it's based upon is a pasuk in Mishlei, which says, "Tenu yayin l'marei nefesh," which is not just talking about someone who's embittered. It means to say, therefore, that Yahadus approaches everything from a rational standpoint. We don't have these, like other religions, prohibition type of mentality. That there's a certain taboo, that it's inherently evil. That we do not have. That is, in certain situations, by the way, you see that this faulty way of thinking is very prominent in the society today, and it affects everybody in the society. This type of mentality is very prominent in today's society, even among non-religious people. They adopt a certain type of a self-righteousness, and they label certain things as being inherently evil. Of course, it's the things that they themselves don't approve of for whatever reason. That's the mentality of the anti-smoking brigade. Whereas the issue of smoking should be approached with intelligence, obviously. It could be something which is very dangerous and should be controlled. But that doesn't mean to say that you have to go to the other extreme and to banish and obliterate any type of smoking whatsoever. That's an absurdity. But there's a certain mentality over there. They can't approach something from a rational standpoint and relate to it in moderation. Up to this point, it could be beneficial. It could be pleasurable. Beyond this point, it's a dangerous and we should avoid it. That's a intelligent way of dealing with it. You see that in Yadis, the true approach with regard to wine, shichrus is a very bad thing. That is to say, drunkenness, alcoholism, that type of thing is destructive. You can't argue with that. However, that is not to say that we have to abolish every source of alcohol. It's not to say that alcohol is evil. It has, in certain situations, it's a positive phenomenon. Person comes home from a hard day's work, a lot of stress, and the like, and person can sit down, have a drink, and that's it, not abused. Makes the person feel relaxed. They can relate better to their wife and children and family. It gives a certain pleasure. That's a good thing. What's wrong with that? To the contrary, to prevent a person from having that type of a release, that would be wrong, that would be evil. Of course, there are certain people that shouldn't have even a drink. That's for sure. If a person knows that person should know their makeup, and if a person cannot control a substance which is dangerous and harmful, clearly there's no question in mind that the person should avoid it. I agree. The ideal, however, is someone who can relate to something in the framework of moderation, as the Rambam points out. That is a higher level than one who abstains. The Rambam says that it's sinful behavior to go to an extreme of abstention, as people who want to deny themselves every kind of pleasure, which the Torah permitted. To the contrary, that's sinful, and that's a defect, because all of these things, to the extent that they can be positive and provide some pleasures, there's no mitzvah to abstain from that pleasure. To the contrary, you're depriving yourself of something which, if you had it, would put you in a better state, would make you into a happier person. So why are you depriving yourself of it? If the answer is that you just can't because you can't control yourself, so then, okay. But that's a defect. That's a weakness. And you have to be honest. You have to acknowledge the weakness. There are certain foods, perhaps, that a person should not be eating because they're harmful. But the person can't control it. They're addicted. They shouldn't have potato chips. You can't eat just one. You're addicted. So then I agree, if that's the way the person is, then they shouldn't keep any potato chips in the house. That makes perfect sense to me. Can't argue with that. But I'm saying that type of a phenomenon is not the ideal. There is a benefit to be had in wine, let us say, to new yayin l'mari nefesh. Not only that, on Yom Tov, it's a mitzvah to drink wine, because that's considered to be an essential element in joy, in simcha. So wine, therefore, is a very positive thing. It's regarded as a very positive thing. Yeah, at the same time, it destroys lives. It destroys, and there are many books in Torah that rail against shichrus. So how do you deal with that? Is it a contradiction? No, that's the nature of life, that there are many things that, if they are used properly, are very beneficial. If they're abused, they're very harmful. Can't change that. You can't abolish. The approach of many people today is to try and change the nature of reality to suit their needs. It doesn't make any sense. There's no perfection in that. The question, however, is being raised. It's raised by the commentaries that it's a very strange requirement that at the Suda a person has to get drunk. It's also strange that the barometer would be ad lo yeda, to the extent that the person can't recognize the difference between good and evil. That's a serious problem, because as we've said, it's essential. What defines a person is the capacity for clear thought, for knowledge. So it's one thing to say that sometimes a person is very upset and depressed and it's painful, so you have to drink a little bit to get out of that mood. But it's quite another thing to say that it's a positive thing to be in a state where you can't recognize the difference between good and evil. That's very, very challenging. The Be'er Halacha explains that the reason for the requirement of drinking is because it's the idea of a mishta, a drinking party. This was very prominent in those days. And if you read the story of Purim, the Megillah, it seems that virtually all the significant events occurred in relationship to this mishta, this drinking party. The death of Vashti was at a drinking party. Then it says after the king and Haman agreed to pay the Jews, that they sat down and had a party, and they drank. And of course, the miracle of the removal of the policy, or the change in policy, the removal of Haman, took place at a party that Esther had thrown. So, since this is a very prominent feature in the story, so the idea of drinking will bring it home to mind. That's one explanation. It's also important to point out that the Rama in the Mishnah Berurah cites other opinions that don't take this idea of until you don't know the difference between good and evil literally. But rather, they say that you don't have to get that drunk. They kind of lower the standard, minimize. That is, that one should drink to remember the idea that of the drinking party. So they say that a person should drink more than they're accustomed to, and that they then would fall asleep. And that's the meaning. So that's the meaning of not knowing the difference. That's how some interpret it. Not that literally you don't know the difference, but that it's like you don't know the difference because you drink more than you're accustomed to and you sort of doze off. Well, according to that, basically it means that you fulfill the requirement by partaking of a certain amount. I would say that it's part of the Suda. It's connected to the Suda, to the meal. And of course, the main objective of the meal is to rejoice. It's a day of rejoicing. And as we've seen, wine is something which enhances rejoicing. So that a person, and it's celebration. You see that even people that don't normally drink wine, if it's a celebration, someone says, let's take out the champagne and the toast and whatever, so they'll drink something. Of course, so by doing so, they're acknowledging that they regard this as being a great joy and a celebration. On the commentary, Ad Lo Yoda, on the words, the Be'er Halacha quotes the Me'iri. And this is his explanation, that a person is obligated, laharbos besimcha, to increase joy on this day, and eating and drinking, ashala yechzar shum dava, until he's not missing anything. Nevertheless, we're not commanded to get drunk and to demean ourselves, diminish ourselves, because of the simcha. Because we have not been commanded to have a simcha of frivolousness and foolishness. This is a very, very important point. Because one could lodge a very serious complaint over here. It is a custom among Gentiles, for example, on St. Patrick's Day. And they have their parade, whatever it is, and drinking is the most prominent feature. And it winds up with a tremendous amount of drunkenness in public. And once people get drunk, then they engage in all kinds of ridiculous behaviors, aggressive behaviors, and fighting, and cursing, and doing all kinds of things which are essentially a disgrace to the whole dignity of the human being. This is a very important point, and it's worthwhile even on a practical level, because unfortunately, the fact that the halacha does call for drinking is misinterpreted, and it does bring forth a lot of that type of behavior among Jews. This is an area which needs to be addressed, particularly yeshiva students very often take this as a license to drink and drink and drink, and to get lishtaker, to really get seriously drunk, and then to engage in all kinds of crazy behaviors in which they could be saying crazy things, getting into fights, or throwing up, and then publicly engaging the kinds of behaviors which clearly would be perhaps a chilul Hashem, a desecration of God's name. It's certainly inimical to the whole dignity of a human being. Now the Me'iri is going out of his way to make that point, that there is no justification for that, and that's not the simcha. So therefore, you see how important it is in Judaism to be able to differentiate one thing from another thing, even though they seem to be very, very close, even though they seem to be very, very connected. And one, the prevailing attitude that I pointed out today would say, well, why even start then? Let's just drop the entire thing, because one thing can lead to another, and we've seen that the one thing does lead to another. Still and all, that's not the approach of Judaism. It retains the basic requirement and warns us very, very strongly not to misinterpret it and to allow it to become something which would be a very serious sin, a very serious avera. He says, Ela b'simcha shel tainug, we've been commanded in a simcha of tainug, of enjoyment, sheyagia mitocha l'avas Hashem yisbarach, that we shall arrive as a result of that to a love of God, v'hodah, and to a thanksgiving, a state of acknowledgement and thanksgiving, anisim she'asalanu, for the miracles that he did to us. The Me'iri that's being quoted over here is saying a very, very profound thing. That is, that to the contrary, the purpose of the wine is to play a role, enabling us to have a certain type of a simcha, and the ultimate objective of that simcha is to achieve a higher degree of Ahavas Hashem, of love of God. Of course, we have to analyze that, because Ahavas Hashem, love of God, is obviously the most important mitzvah. That's the ultimate state of perfection, and we're obligated in that throughout the entire year, and no one would ever associate the drinking of wine with that type of thing. This is very challenging at first glance, this notion that wine can somehow play a role, a positive role, in enhancing one's religious experience, the most significant one that we talk about, that is to say, the love of God, Ahavas Hashem. To the contrary, this would seem to be a purely emotional phenomenon, and there's an interesting halacha that comes to mind at this point, and that is that it is prohibited for a shikar. If someone is drunk, it is prohibited for them to daven, to say the prayers, to say the Shemoneh Esrei. There's two different degrees. If a person is drunk so that he couldn't speak properly in front of a king, and he nevertheless got up and prayed, davened, that's considered to be an abomination, that prayer. It's an abomination. How can one relate to God when one's mind is completely distorted? You see that the only way that a person can relate to God properly is through his divine image, the ability to understand, clarity of thought. If a person merely drank a few ounces of wine, a revia said there, then the person is not allowed to daven either, but assuming that they were able to speak properly, they weren't drunk to that point, they just had a glass of wine, they were still able to speak properly, so then they shouldn't daven, because they should only daven when there's no wine affecting them at all. But if they daven in that state, then it's not an abomination and they fulfill their obligation. But all of this goes to show you that the notion that drunkenness could be a state in which a person relates to God seems to be impossible in the framework of Judaism. Yet here, the Meiri is saying that that is the explanation for the phenomenon of drinking on Purim. I believe what the Meiri means is not that a person arrives at a heightened state of closeness or communication with God through substance. There are people that have this notion. I believe that some of the original early Hasidim had this idea that these types of states were good in and of themselves because they remove a person's inhibitions and put him in a different state, and in that state you can attain a closeness to God. The Torah is against that, but there is such a notion among mystical or spiritual people that experiment with drugs. There are religious practices that utilize drugs because in their misguided notion they believe that the removal of a person from ordinary logical thought processes is somehow better in terms of communicating with God. We maintain that is the path towards idolatry. That the only way we can relate to God is through the utilization of our understanding, our intelligence, knowledge of God is the factor which leads to the love of God. Having said that, of course, I still want to explain the Meiri. I don't think the Meiri means the substitution of a drug with clarity of thought. But let's look at the context. The mitzvah of the Suda, in my opinion, and the attendant requirement of imbibing can't be viewed in isolation from the other mitzvot. It's interesting just to see at which point in time the Suda takes place. The basic obligations of Purim is really, there's one central mitzvah. The central mitzvah of Purim is the Megillah. It's different than Hanukkah, where there is a specific mitzvah that you perform, the lighting of the candles. Here there is no activity, but the essential mitzvah is to read the Megillah and repeat it. To read and repeat. To read it at night and repeat it by day. And there's a reason why it's framed that way. It's not simply that you read it at two different times. It's really one unit of study, of involvement, of the mind. That's the essential mitzvah of the mitzvah of reading the Megillah, is to read, to hear, to understand, to become involved in the world of ideas of the Megillah. All of this is interconnected with the other mitzvos. If a person recognizes the ideas of the Megillah, which depict the lifestyle of the tzaddik, of the righteous individual, and how a person ought to face their lives and operate in different situations, the recognition of the truth, and to live a life which is in line with the providential element that that's possible to us if we're living in accordance with the will of God. It produces a certain type of an attitude, a certain type of an understanding, and that person has a different appreciation for being Jewish, for Torah, for the Jewish people. Thus you see that the other mitzvahs of the day flow from this. The mitzvah of Matanos Lev Yonim. All of this has to do with a heightened appreciation of the Jewish people, of being a Jew, and essentially the idea of serving HaKadosh Baruch Hu. This is what we have the opportunity to serve God as a people. And a person should have a tremendous sense of appreciation. Shehivdilanu, that God separated us from the other nations. And there you see clearly, that's the whole story of the Megillah. You see the other nations, those who pursue vanity and falsehood, and they live the instinctual, emotional lifestyle. And then you see the Jews. But not just any Jews, those Jews who cling to the truth, to the ideals of Judaism, no matter what the difficulties, no matter what the penalties may be. And in that situation, divine providence relates to them. That's the miracle. And you have a heightened appreciation. If you don't have an appreciation for the fact that God separated you and God enabled you to be part of this specific instrument that He's designed, the Jewish people, then you're really not connected to Purim at all. So the essential activity which is supposed to bring you into the framework of the Ahavas Hashem, the love of God, and the Hodayah, the thanksgiving, the recognition of the miracle, is the reading of the Megillah. That is the focal point. It's not really just separate mitzvos that happen to run parallel to each other. They're interconnected. Everything flows from the Megillah. And the final activity is the celebration. The celebration means that it's not enough to simply study the ideas in the abstract and even to perform certain deeds that one ought to perform, deeds of kindness. Part of the objective, aside from just giving charity, is to achieve a certain type of an appreciation of the friendship that should exist between Jews. That's the idea of Shlach Manos Ish L'Reyehu, each person L'Reyehu, Reus, a certain removal of animosities that normally exist and intrude upon relationships. To the contrary, there should be ideally a certain type of a harmony among Jews because of that awareness of the fact that we're all part of a very distinct type of an entity and we all have a mission to perform. But all of this culminates with the Seuda. Because the real objective, as I said, it's not simply that this should be in the abstract. But the real perfection of the person is when the emotional state that they're in is in line with these truths. The person has to achieve the level of serving God with joy. It's got to be a day of Simcha. The person really internalizes these ideas and really believes them and really understands the significance, so then the person is going to rejoice. And that's the idea of the meal. Therefore, when a person is making this transition from considering these ideas in the abstract and to putting themselves in the proper emotional state, that's where the wine comes into the picture. Because a person always has certain resistances, emotional resistances. It's very, very difficult to demand that a person be in a certain kind of a mood. It's not to just control your moods. You can work on it. As I mentioned, that on Shabbos, a person has to be in a good mood. You can't just say, well, I'm not. You don't have a right to be in a bad mood, unless it's something impossible. It's impossible, it's something else. But if it's just because you're too lazy and you just don't feel like working on your mood, you don't want to work your way out of the mood, so then you're at fault, because Shabbos is a day of oneg. You're supposed to be happy. Here, the wine is useful, the way the Meiri is mentioning it. The wine is not the positive thing. He's telling us, it's not that there's drinking of wine, it's not that there's getting into a drunken state. It's just that when a person has a certain amount of wine, if the preconditions are all there, that is to say, for example, I'll give you an illustration. So you go to a wedding. So this person is a friend, and there's certain weddings where you don't have to do anything, you're naturally excited. That's because it may be a very close friend, it can be a club member of your family that's very close, so you're naturally excited, you don't have to do anything. I mean, you're looking forward to the day. If it's that kind of, that means that it's a personal symbol. It's a personal joy. If it's a personal joy, as I said, you don't have to be in the mood for it, you're just going to wake up in the mood automatically. Then, of course, there's another case where you just have to go there because it could be a distant relative, you're going there for other reasons, and it's very difficult for you to get caught up in the joy because even if you wanted to, you're not connected to these people. Then there's something in between. That is to say that when you think about it, objectively, abstractly, it is. It's simple. I mean, this is a friend of yours, and you're happy for them and all of that, but it's not that close that you're naturally in that state of joy. So for you, the day is just like any other day. You go to work, you get involved in all of your regular, your regular routine. And the idea that it's something, a happy occasion and all of that is abstract. Then you may come to the wedding, and a lot will depend. It's not a guarantee that you're going to be either singing and rejoicing. You have the capacity, the potential to be in the state of joy. But you may need something to help you transform from your regular mood, your regular attitude, into that state of joy. That's why a person can have a drink or two, and then the music starts, you get into it, you start to dance, and now you're feeling, and now it happens naturally. You need something to help you make the transition from your ordinary state into that state of joy. It doesn't necessarily have to be a drink, but you see it every wedding, they serve nice food, and there's drinks, and then the music starts, and sometimes all of a sudden you feel completely different. I think everybody's had that experience, where initially you kind of were even resisting. Sometimes the person doesn't feel like dancing. Even though you say, yeah, I know it's a great simcha, I just don't feel like dancing. And people try to pull you in, to get you going. And sometimes if you just allow yourself to be pulled into it, before you know it, the change takes place, and now you're dancing naturally. You've seen many times where people undergo a complete change, a transition from one emotional state towards another in the very middle of the phenomenon itself. Now, when that happens, what is it that you're suddenly dancing and joyous about? The fact that you drank wine? What is it? Are you relating to the simcha of the wedding itself? There are people, by the way, there are people that can be very distant. They may be going there because they had to go there. And they're not really involved. They hardly even know the people. And sometimes, it's a contagious thing. It's a contagious thing, and people like to dance, and they got up, they started dancing, they loosened up, and now they're having a lot of fun. But that fun is not related to the event that's taking place. It's just an opportunity for them to have fun. No different than if you went out, a couple goes out to some kind of disco, a bar, whatever it is, and they're just dancing, having fun, letting loose. But my question is, people that are dancing and rejoicing, are they rejoicing for, is that rejoicing related to the simcha? I'm saying there is a category of people that, yeah, they're not just singing and dancing. The whole significance and the meaning of the rejoicing is that it's relating to the simcha, because for them it is a simcha. The only thing is that it's a simcha in the abstract, and they need something to make the transformation from something which is abstract to something which is concrete and emotional, and there the eating, the drinking, and the music puts them in a certain state. That's, I believe, what the Meiri is saying. That a person has to be in a precondition. If you're not in that precondition, primed, to relate to the miracles of the day, and to have an enhanced sense of Ahavas Hashem, of love of God, because of your understanding of the significance of what took place, then this is not going to work, obviously. And unfortunately, the drinking becomes a license for people to just get crazy. That is absolutely contrary to the purpose. But if the precondition is there, that is to say that a person has studied the story, and a person has really gotten involved in it, and an understanding, and all the ideas that are associated, and what it means, and then they do the mitzvos, which are based upon the idea of a new type of an appreciation of the entity of the Jewish people. Now you are in the proper framework to actually experience that joy. There's something to be said for the actual emotional experience, to actually let yourself go and to experience it emotionally. That is very, very important. That, I think, is the reason for the drinking of the wine. And that's what the Meiri says, that that is a mitzvah in the sense that it puts you in a certain state of tainug, a certain state of relaxation, a certain state of enjoyment. And when you experience that, you associate that enjoyment to the significance of the day, and this leads you to an increased appreciation of the miracles and to a new level of Ahavas Hashem, of love of God. According to the way I understand the Meiri, his interpretation would mean that one has to be very, very careful, that there's a fine line in terms of how much you should drink. Because if it gets too much, if it's to the point where you're significantly drunk, in that state you really can't have Ahavas Hashem. You can't experience true Ahavas Hashem. Then you're just drunk. You're crazy. So the way he explains it would mean that it's a certain type of a minimal amount which is sufficient to relax you and to enable it to heighten. It sort of heightens your emotional sensitivity so that you can experience the enjoyment. But it shouldn't be that amount which would cause distortion in terms of your perceptions. That would not make sense. That's my interpretation of the explanation of the Meiri. This would be a different idea than those who are taking the Ad lo yada, until he doesn't know the difference between Haman and Mordechai. Literally, if you're going to take it literally, that's a different concept. That's not the way the Meiri is explaining it. If you read the Megillah, you'll see that when they were actually developing the practices which would form the basis for the mitzvahs of Purim, it's really all interconnected. All of them go up to make up the elements which differentiate the day and render it into a day of joy. Yeah, originally it just says that they made it Yom Mishdev Asimcha, a day of a party and joy. And when Mordechai wrote the letter to make it official, to observe it, it's Yom Mishdev Asimcha, the day of partying and joy. Umishloach Manos, and sending the gifts to your friend, the Reus element, the element of friendship, and Matzanis Lavyonim, and not to forget the poor. All of these things are interconnected. And, of course, the foundation is the reading of the Megillah. Without the reading of the Megillah, all these things don't have a purpose. The purpose, of course, is to appreciate the differentiation between the Jewish people, those who live in accordance with Torah, and therefore relate to God's providence, and the other way of life, the false way of life, which leads to destruction.